session number 16726, Mr. H. Bell, reel 10.
Mr. Bell, reel 10. You'd reached the foot of the hill on which Kohima stands, Mr. Bell. What were you seeing there at the time?
Well, we stood back.
It was a very peaceful, it was a beautiful day, actually. And we stood back while some of the forces who had been on the hill came up. There were no Europeans amongst them. I think they were Assam Rifles. And they were very despondent. And I remember I said to them, "Take eye, Johnny. Nay, take our boat crab." They were very despondent and distressed.
What does that mean?
That means, well, I asked them, was everything all right? And they said, no. In brief. And they wondered. And we went up. It was a peaceful day, the sun was shining, and there wasn't a sound. And at that stage, I'd like to say that we hadn't been told where the Japs were. We hadn't a clue, except that they were somewhere in front, and it was all wrong. We should have been told, but we weren't. So we went up the hill, past a burned-out hospital, as I remember, and we went up to the top of the hill, and met chaos. There were holes dug everywhere, there was stuff lying around, and there were mules which had been buried but not buried deep enough, and they were bulging up above the surface, and the whole scene of absolute desolation and conflict and desolation. But we got in there and we were given a hole to get into, and then we were told to go down and bring our gear up, the blue derry, which is a mat we used to lie on, and to bring them up the hill. I don't know what for. We never got a chance to use them. So I went down the hill. Started off to go down the hill, and I lost my way, didn't I? And I found myself right on the edge of the hill, a very steep decline, and a large water pipe running along the edge. And I was strolling down, minding my own business and enjoying the beautiful day as it was, and I came across three Assam Rifles sitting in a dugout talking. And I said, "Take eye, Johnny." "Nay, nay, Japani Walla." Japani, which is the Japanese. And they pointed, and just at that minute, a rifle bullet came flying over, just missed me. So I dodged down and I finished the rest of it behind the water pipe, crawling on my hands and knees down behind the water pipe, right to the very bottom, down by the ruins. I had come the wrong path. And the ruins of the hospital loomed in front of me, and there was a low stone wall. And I crept along, and I'd started to rise up on my feet over the top of the wall, but all of a sudden this horrible grinning face appeared. It was a dead Jap, blackened with the sun, and I got the shock of my life. But anyway, I got down and I finished, got my gear, and I went back up the hill again.
Had the relief been carried out in broad daylight?
Yes. Not a sound, not a shot fired from the Japanese.
Do you remember the date that you did this change?
Somewhere around about the 20th of April. Somewhere around about then, I can't tell you exactly, naturally. But somewhere around about the 20th of April.
Can you tell me the position of the battalion in relation to yourself? Where was the rest of the battalion when they took up their positions in your relation to your own position?
I think there was D Company, C Company, and I think B, but I'm not quite certain. But there was only three companies of the battalion up on the hill itself, proper. The rest were reserve.
You would be with battalion headquarters, were you?
I was with headquarters at that time.
So the rifle companies would be ahead of you somewhere?
Yes.
Could you see them from where you were?
Couldn't see anything from where you were. It was a it was like the surface of the moon. There were just trunks of trees. All the tops were lopped off for shellfire, and holes like the craters on the moon. It was sheer desolation. It was terrible. And we went there, and we got settled down. Not a shot fired. We didn't know the Japs were there, really. And certainly, well, after that, I run. We got sorted out, and I went to D Company. I went to D Company. C Company was forward of us on the far slopes of the hill, and a little bit further over was a little bit higher hill called Cookie's Picket, which we eventually found was occupied by the Japanese. But we didn't at that time know. And we settled in.
What distances are we talking about between yourself and Japs?
Yards. And yards. We're counting in yards. Yards. Very, very short distance. And I went into a dugout with another singer. I'm not give his name. And we got settled in. When we got in the dugout, it was like Aladdin's cave. It was full of tins of bacon, sausage, everything that was tin was all stashed away. Like magpies are throwing stuff up, been dropped by parachute and had packed it all away. It probably needed one because they probably didn't want to use it, you see, was fat there. And I found a tin of bacon, American bacon, beautiful. And we opened it up, and I put it, got my tin out, and we did a little fire, little twigs on the surface of this dugout, happy as Larry, and we got the bacon frying. All of a sudden there was a bang, and the mess tin went flying, and the bacon. The sniper had got it out of way, so we lost our bacon, and we kept underneath after that. I can't remember much more about that, except when I was duty, I was put in charge of the telephone exchange. Shall I say at this stage that the positions on the hill were not defensive positions at all? They were a hodgepodge. There were some trenches on the outside of the perimeter, but the middle was just holes for protection. It had been dug anywhere and everywhere. It was certainly not a defensive position. So we got it, and it was a big hole on the forward slope of the hill facing Cookie's Picket. And they put a telephone exchange in there. Still no more shots, still nothing. We got in, and I was getting three fellas with me. I was Lance Corporal in charge of the exchange, and the lines were run out. No opposition. Telephone lines were run out. And so we settled in.
Must it being difficult to move during daylight?
At that stage, it wasn't difficult to move. No. I can't understand it. I can't understand it at all. We still didn't know where the... If I saw that stray rifle shot, we didn't know where they were.
And your cables were just running across the top of the ground?
Yes. In a ladder system. A ladder system is like the rungs of a ladder. And it's made so that if one gets broken, the message travels around and the lens. It's in case of breakages. So anyway, that was done, and we settled down. And shall I say before that, while we were in the dugout, there was a terrific roll of heavy fire, field gun fire, and it fell right in front of us. We thought it was a Japanese fire. My colleague in the front was terrified. I wasn't happy myself. There was a sort of call it a ravine in front of our position, and all the shells were falling in there. It was actually turned out to be what they call DF fire, defensive fire. It was laid on, and it was It was given numbers, DF1, DF2, whatever, in between us and where the Japs were, as we subsequently found out. So anyway, we went back and we got settled into the telephone exchange and night time, and that was the first attack. Well, I was in this hole, 6 foot deep hole. I could barely see over the top, and the Japanese attacked. Ferocious it was. I could just see over the top of the thing, and we couldn't do a thing. We couldn't fire rifles or anything else. We just had to just stay there. I wasn't happy at all, I can tell you. And I don't mind when I'm able to fight for myself, but I wasn't. And there was a summer house on top of the hill, and I found it later. It was full of old parachutes and things, rubbish, and it took fire, and it lit up the whole of the scene. We could call it Dante's Inferno. It was a sight I shall never forget all as long as I live. Coming towards me was a line of Japanese. The ones in front weren't armed. They were carrying haversacks. Subsequently found out they were full of phosphorus grenades, and they were throwing them. The others were coming along behind, and I particularly remember one large, I should think he was a sergeant, but he had a sword, and he was beating them with the flat of the sword, driving them on. And of course our own people were up the top, they were firing over the top of us, you know. We were in between the two. Somebody at the top called out, Corporal Bell, get out of there quick. Can it? Because to get out, I would have to climb over the top, stick my backside up in the air. No way was I going to do that. I just stayed where we were. The rest were quite happy to do so. We stayed where we were. Fortunately, they never reached the telephone exchange. They were beaten back. But that was the first attack. It was a ferocious one. And as I say, it was lit up with this burning shed. And it was a really sight I shall never forget. I was terrified.
What was the Japanese method of attack? Did they sound off bugles or shout or what?
A lot of shout. No, they were always noisy, the Japanese. Always noisy. In time to come, when they were out and when they were on patrol, they used to shout. You could hear them coming a mile off. You could hear them. They were very noisy people. Even as you say, now on the television, they're noisy.
What was the hill you were on? Had it a name?
It was Garrison Hill, or Hospital Hill. Garrison Hill, Hospital Hill, I don't know. Garrison Hill, we call it. And I say the far one was Cookie's Picket. It was dumbbell-shaped, more or less. Dumbbell-shaped. With this slight dip in between the two hills.
Were they courageous troops, the Japanese? Did they press on in attack?
The Japanese are not frightened to die at all, no. They're, except for the fact that they don't seem to be able to think for themselves, but they are a good soldier. Yeah. And of course, when you come to think that these troops have been fighting for years, come through China, they have been 3 or 4 years in the field, so they're bound to be good troops.
Did they get close enough to you to throw their phosphorus bombs at
no.
you?
Thank God, no. I wouldn't be here now if they had. No.
Was D Company still in front of you and between you and the Japs?
There was nobody. From what I remember, there was nobody in front of me and the Japs. That's what worried me. I don't remember. I could look over the top and see the Japanese quite plainly, and I don't remember anybody being in front of me. Bearing in mind the fact that we didn't know when we came there where the Japs were, so we just occupied these positions as they were. You know? It wasn't a very happy state of affairs. But anyway, it died down. And
sorry, when the attack dies down and peters out, what's your immediate reaction? Because you must have been really hyped up and tense.
Hard to tell. I really couldn't say.
Some men are fatigued.
No.
Well, some are hungry. Some are thirsty. You know.
Numbed, I think, is more the expression. I wasn't fatigued.
How long do you recall that that particular action lasted?
All night. All night, yes. All night. In the morning.
So you say all night. So it's right through the hours of darkness. What's the visual picture that you're seeing in that dark period of time?
With the burn. Well, as the fire burned down, of course, it darkened. But most of the time I could see.
Do shells light up things or what have you?
There weren't many shells. There weren't many shells to be seen. Mortar bombs, yes, but Dante's Inferno.
Had they reached the British positions, was there any hand-to-hand fighting going on?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. I think they were driven back with intensive fire and mortars, grenades. They didn't like our grenades, by the way. Coming at it later on.
So you're in this company headquarters with your telephone, and this action is going on.
I was at headquarters then. I was telephone exchanges headquarters.
So what kind of messages were you receiving or sending back during the action?
None. Everybody was too busy to send messages. In the morning, at dawn, everything had gone quiet. Everything had gone deathly quiet. I can remember a bird singing, a monotonous bird call, dee 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 dee, and it went over and over. One bird, one solitary bird. Okay? And I remember that. And I called up the company, as was my practice, testing line. The only line I could get was the adjutant, Captain Clegg, and he laughed his head off. Of all the things he says, testing line. They said he was like this. But that was it. That was my duty at test line, see, which was working, which wasn't. That was only one working for the adjutant. Every other one was broken.
There would be scenes of the night's battle in front of you and around you. What were those?
Don't know. I got out as sharp as I could, and I haven't got eyes on my backside. I just scampered up the hill, and that was it. Well, they told us. Somebody shouted and we came out. You see, left the exchange and everything.
They didn't see how many losses of Japs and British were lying around at that point.
There was bodies lying around, yes, but I haven't got... After a night like that, I was in no mood to look around and admire the scenery. I just scarpered up the hill as fast as I could and got in a safe situation. I knew then that where the Japs were.
What happened after that?
I was at headquarters for a while. The Japs attacked, the most ferocious attack, being on Tojo's birthday.
What date was that?
Back end of April, I would think it would be. I think it was back end of April. I'm not quite certain, but I think it was the back end of April. But they came on shouting, Tojo, Tojo, Tojo. I think that was the night that... friend of mine, he's a friend of mine now, he wasn't then because he was this company sergeant major, but I think that was the night that he got burned. I was with D company, and the Japanese, that was the night of Tojo's birthday attack, and once again it was grenade, phosphorus grenade throwing, because Martin McLean was burned with a phosphorus bomb, and I was with Captain Waterhouse, Tanky Waterhouse, we called him, was company commander, and he was in. And a peculiar incident, I was in there with the signals and the radio and the telephone, and we were down for the smoke. Being a lance corporal and full of brilliant ideas, I spread a blanket on the ground, crawled underneath it, lit a cigarette, and it went by the others and crawled back out again. And Tanky Woodhouse came in, sniffed. Who's smoking? Me, sir. For God's sake, light me one, he says. Anyway, and this went on all night. The positions, seat company, I think it was, but it was forward of us, were overrun, heavy losses. And then once again, it was amazing that as dawn broke and it began to get light, everything seemed to quieten down. All the attacks were done at night. The Japanese attack at night. Oh, it's a sniper shot. I remember the days as being rather quiet, not dull by any means, but rather quiet. And now they're all done like that.
Were there any signs, again, after this particular attack, since they were overrunning companies, could you see what had happened on the following morning?
No, don't forget that the surface of that was in a mess when we got on. I've told you before, the bodies of mules were bloated and rising above the ground, the smell was terrible, and there were other bodies lying about. A few more bodies you couldn't really notice. And we said it was a little bit forward of where I was, so you couldn't really see.
Had they been driven back after overrunning?
No, they had overrun. So in the morning, the battle patrol was going in. Captain Greenwell was in command of battle patrol. And they went forward. And an incident happened there which annoyed me rather much. Flory Ford, who was a battle patrol man, as they went in, they were all armed with Sten guns, I think. And obviously he didn't like it because he dropped his Sten gun and grabbed my rifle and went forward. And that's the last I ever saw my rifle. It disappeared because he didn't come back. So I lost my rifle. I had a Sten gun which I didn't want.
Were battle patrols large sections of people, quite a number of men in the battle patrol?
The battle patrol was a platoon drawn from, I think, volunteers. Not just volunteers, of course. They had to be tried and proved, but they were volunteers from the companies. They did the odd jobs, patrolling, for scouting and patrolling. They were a good lot of lads. I knew most of them, and they were good. But I say, Flory Ford pinched my rifle. Well, it didn't do him any good.
How were you being supplied? Was it aircraft drops?
There were aircraft drops. I don't remember them dropping. I don't remember, but I know that there were parachutes on the trees and so on. Most of the stuff went to the Japanese. It drifted over to the Japanese, but there were some. I don't remember eating. I don't know whether it was at that time or not that we had key rations, American key rations. I don't know. We didn't cook anything. But during the period we were on the hill, we had the most marvellous evening meals I've ever had. A carrier came up with insulated containers of all-in stew, which is corned beef, dehydrated beans, peas, potatoes, you name it, it was all in stew, and it was hot. And when we stood down, we were issued with a mess tin, but it was beautiful. It was beautiful. You couldn't get that stuff at the best hotel in London. It was magnificent. It was. I've even made it since I come home, and I still enjoy it. All in stew.
So there was a track of some kind up that carriers could come up?
Yes. And I'm saying yes, I don't know. It could have come to the foot of the hill and been carried up. I don't know. You're not able to roam around and find out what's going on. My memories of that time is staying undercover. The very first time I got out of my dugout and wandered around, I got a shock of my life. There was a rat, 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 and splinters flew off the tree trunks all around me. It had a machine gun. Thank God it was above my head, you know. If it hadn't been, I would have been cut in half. But that was it, you see. And so from then on, I crept around.
Such things like washing. Were you able to wash?
No.
Toilets? What did you do for toiletry?
I remember creeping into a bit of a copse and doing what I had to do and using dried leaves. I remember that. Other than, I can't remember anything else. I don't know whether I was constipated or not. After what I'd been through, I don't think I would be constipated. but anyway, no, I don't remember those little things. The only meal I remember getting was the one at the evening, at stand down. Washing. I got washed in the dregs of my tea. A pair of tea leaves in the dregs of the tea. We were only allowed, I think, about a pint of water a day. I'm not certain about that amount, but a very, very small quantity of water a day we were allowed, so you didn't... I got washed with the remains of my pot of tea.
So essentially, supplies were coming to you at night, at dusk or whatever.
Yeah, but whatever supplies there were. No. I don't remember meals. I only remember the meal at stand down. Other than that, I can't remember anything else about meals.
Did you get affected by lice or creatures of
any kind? No. Not there, no. Later on, yes. But not there. The only thing was, the monsoons hadn't quite started then. So it wasn't too bad. We slept in those dugouts and we could hardly stir. It must have been very unpleasant, and I think that's why I can't remember it. I think my mind shut it out. It was... You couldn't move about through the day. I remember looking over and seeing the padre and the medical officer looking after a few wounded in a dip. There was no hospital as such, and they just had to do it in the open. Padre Rice was a fine man. It was all done, as I say, with the fact that we were overlooked all the time by this lot of Cookies Picket. A very miserable time.
when you were operating, as you say, in an attack, you weren't operating because people hadn't time. When you were operating as a signaller, what kind of messages were you giving in the normal course of events?
Very few. Very few. Just basically day-to-day messages. When the attacks were on, none. No. There was really no need. There was such close quarters. If you look at a map of that hill, it's very, very close quarters. There was really no need for communication. We were bookshe.
You mentioned the phosphorus bombs that the Japanese were using against you. Obviously, they had their arms, their rifles. What other weapons were they?
They had a horrible, what they call a spring grenade, which was like an egg cup, with the base of it being a rounded clip which fitted over the knee, and the grenade fitted in the top. And they banged it down. It was a spring grenade, and you could hear at night, ding, ding, and that was a grenade. But they were very poor. They did not. 50% of them exploded, and the rest just laid around. A great friend of mine, Jimmy Morrison, he was a clumsy lad. Always falling over things, and I remember this particular morning. A spring grenade had fallen a little bit away from me, 20 yards possibly, and the pioneers had put a big line around it to keep off, and he walked on top of it, and the sole of his boot, inwardly had a double soul in the boat with that, because I disturbed him so all it was a hammer like blow on the sole of his foot, which smashed his foot, which is a bag of bones. He refused to have it operated on, and so he was crippled for the rest of his life. But they were the danger. These spring grenades, and I say they didn't explode. Although they were very poor, and they were lying around, and you had to be careful not to stand on them.
Were you mortared? Were they using mortars against you?
I don't recall any. I suppose we were. They had a nasty thing called a battalion gun. It's rather like the thing you see on old castles in this country. It was a little solid paddle gun on little solid wheels, and it was dragged along with the battalion. Every battalion had one, and it fired a solid shot. Most unpleasant, because they fired it on a direct sighting, and this solid cannonball whipped through the trees, sending splinters flying right, left and centre. It was a terrifying weapon, but didn't do any damage, really. Just scared the life out of you.